Awesome kid.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
All right.
Remember I heard about it like a few weeks ago.
I have a new grandbaby.
Like for the first time, wasn't like.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, my daughter has another.
Okay, we're recording.
The time is now 6:30 and the chair will call the Human Services Committee meeting of Monday, June 1st, 2015 to order. Ms. Davis, could you please call the roll?
David Hallman.
Present.
Mike Gable.
Yo.
Greg Redslob.
Here.
Leah Blau.
Here.
Aaron Decker.
Here.
Anita Johnson.
Here.
David Arrington. Did he call anybody?
I haven't heard anything.
And our new youth and governance, Sarah Klimich.
Here.
And Jasmine Zidan.
Zidan.
Okay.
Are there any citizen comments? Any citizens wishing to speak, please step forward. You have 5 minutes to address the committee. Seeing none, citizen comments are closed. Agenda item 3, motion to approve the minutes of 5/5/15. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve. Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gable, second by Supervisor Decker. Neither of you as youth and governance were here, so I don't, yeah, no. So, committee?
Aye.
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 Aye. Normally you vote first, but because you weren't here, you technically you can't vote, that's why.
Oh, gotcha.
So since we've acknowledged you, would you ladies like to introduce yourselves, tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Sarah Klimich. I go to Indian Trail High School and Academy. I'm a junior. I play soccer, and I like to hang out with friends and family and just play sports.
Who's your supervisor?
Oh,
county board supervisor.
Yeah.
Which district do you live in?
Or where do you live?
Pleasant Prairie.
Oh, maybe mine.
It's probably Doug. He's got a bunch.
Yeah, he did
where
have a bunch.
Where in Pleasant Prairie?
Oh. I live in the neighborhood behind Target.
Oh, okay.
So.
Aha, she's worried.
No, I was thinking. I'm Jasmine Zidan. I'm a junior at Trumper. I am involved in figure skating over at the Iceplex. I coach and I still skate. And outside of that, I like to hang out with friends and shop and, you know, do that kind of stuff. My supervisor is... I know her last name is Blau.
That's me. Oh. I was going to say, I remember you. It's like, I hope you remember.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm
that's
really
okay.
Bad name.
Well, now you'll never forget.
Okay.
You'll remember.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. If you have any questions, feel free to ask, whether, you know, in committee, before, or after. Email is always accessible to you to get to us, as well as to our human services staff. I don't know, have you all had the tour yet, or is that on the horizon? It's coming up. Okay. So, if any questions, don't ever hesitate to ask. If you think you have a question, ask it anyway.
Okay.
All right. Agenda item 4, approval of the county executive appointments. Gail Gens to the Administrative Board of Appeals and Rita
Kadamian
to the Kenosha County Board of Health. Thank you. I didn't want to keep that up.
We have two appointments tonight. One is a reappointment, Rita. Gail is here this evening. I think everyone is familiar with her. It's to the Board of Administrative Appeals, which is a countywide, by statute, a countywide board for any appeals that would be filed on behalf of someone objecting to something the counties do. Generally, when we started this whole process, it was regarding denial of foster care licenses or daycare certification and things along that line. So it's kind of fallen onto us to keep that board going forward, and Gail would be replacing a vacancy. She's here this evening in case anyone has any questions of her.
Can we ask her how the golf game is?
She'll have the right to appeal that.
How many appeals do we have in a normal course of events?
It really varies. And generally, the vast majority were daycare type appeals and foster care. And those have kind of died down as the state has come out with more regs and saying this is why you can get certified or licensed and why you can't. So it's kind of really pulled a lot back. I don't know, on average, Sharon, do you know?
We didn't have many last year.
Yeah, zero last year, so it's... Okay. And I say that now, and it'll probably be 15 the remainder of this year. But, yeah, it's hard to determine.
Is this their last shot at it when they go to before the...
I believe, depending on what they're appealing, potentially, yes. Yes. And then it could go, if they're unhappy with this group, it could go over to circuit court.
So are there any more questions, or is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Same motion.
Motion by Supervisor Gable, second by Supervisor Glau. Youth and governance?
The irony.
Or abstain. Abstain is like, yes, you know, aye, nay, you know.
You get to vote.
Yep. If you want to approve her appointment, that's what the question is.
Aye.
Aye.
My God, we've put you to sleep already.
Wait, can I?
Yeah.
And abstain is, let's say it was your mom that was being appointed. You'd want to abstain from that.
Right.
You know, something that's conflict of interest or something like that, then you'd abstain for it also.
As long as you have another house that you can. committee?
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye.
The second one is Rita Kadamian to the Board of Health. She's been on it. This is a reappointment. If you've read the write-up, certainly since April 2010, she has attended 26 out of 29 meetings, and her three absences were excused. She is a doctor in nursing, works out at Children's Hospital, our Child Advocacy Center, which is on 75th Street and H, out in that area, and has been a member of this community, I think, forever.
Forever, that's a long time.
She was a good Tormson. Forever.
Oh my God. That's pretty impressive resume, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I looked at it real quickly. Pretty impressive. Mm. That's.
She's the one that does our, when a child is brought in due to neglect or abuse, we'll do the first initial physical and contact with that child. So you'll see in his or her family members. So that's why you see a lot of it dealing with child abuse and child endangerment and things like that. That's her specialty.
It's too bad she couldn't be here tonight. I'd like to meet her. That's okay.
But what you just stated isn't because of her position on the Board of Health. It's because of her
correct
job.
Correct. Correct.
I make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Decker, second by Supervisor Johnson. Youth and Governance, aye to approve the nomination, nay to decline the nomination, and abstain for whichever reason you prefer.
Aye.
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 Aye. Committee.
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Agenda item number 5, Division of Aging and Disability Services Presentation, Behavioral Health Treatment Court.
We have two guests tonight. This is kind of a continuation of the discussion we started last month with you about mental health services. We realized we really didn't get into the Behavioral Health Treatment Court, which has been up and running for a while. So we have LaShonda Tollfree, who is from Kenosha Human Development Services and oversees that project, and Lorenzo Jones, who I believe is a graduate from the Behavioral Health Treatment Court, that's here to provide information on his experience in there. So we'll turn it over to them to do the presentation.
Hello, thanks for having us on this evening. My name is LaShonda, and my office is out of Kenosha Human Development Services. I've been there for almost 14 years, and currently coordinator of the city's Behavioral Health Treatment Court. Now, we have been up and running for about 2 years now, and I've put a pamphlet and some information on the table for you guys. Now, our treatment court is a specialty court, and we deal with specifically individuals who have a severe and persistent mental illness. They can also have co-occurring disorder as well, so they can have ALDA issues. And on our treatment court team, we have a total of 13 team members, and we come together every week to talk about each participant in the program. And everyone that sits on our treatment court team, we have the judge, we have a representative from the district attorney's office, public defender's office, NAMI, police department, a series of treatment providers, and we all come together to discuss each participant. Who qualifies for our behavioral health treatment court? They do have to be 18 years and over. Also, they are placed under supervision for up to 2 years. That way, we can monitor them for the duration of the time that they're on the program under probation. We take alternative to revocations, so we work directly close to the Department of Corrections, and we also work with deferred prosecution agreements. So someone can have a current case open, which gives us the time to work with them, and at the end, their current charges could either be reduced or even dismissed after a successful completion of the program. Now, once they enter our program, we screen them for other services that they could qualify if they're not already receiving services. Our main case management piece to the program is under the community support program, as well as the comprehensive community service program, which are two programs that provide case management services for our participants. They do medication monitoring, as well as home visits, and they are also get referrals to the DVR. So our participants are very busy when they're on our program. Or sometimes they tell us that it's like probation on steroids because they're so active in the community. They have lots of people monitoring them. They're checking in with me as the coordinator, their probation officer, as well as a series of groups and meetings throughout the week, and their probation officer. Once they're on the program, like I said, they get case management, medication monitoring. We also randomly drop them on a daily basis, weekly basis. We're set up with we call it the UA hotline. So every morning they get up and call to see if it's their color to go drop at the health services. And if they do, then they randomly go drop. And so we do alcohol and drug monitoring. Right now we have a total of 11 participants in the program. Since we began in 2013, 2 years ago, we've had a total of 62 referrals to the program, and we've accepted 29, 18 have been discharged, and we've had 3 graduates to the program. While they're in the program, it's all about treatment.
Right. Yes. We have a supervisor with a question. Supervisor Johnson?
Yeah. Discharged, does that mean they've been let go? They didn't meet the requirements?
Correct. They've either been terminated or maybe revocated back to prison. It could be for various reasons.
So they failed?
They failed to complete the program. Mm-hmm.
Wow, 18.
Mm-hmm. It's not an easy program. Sure. Those who are able to go through and remain in the program, it's a lot of work, but it can be successful.
Are any of them redundant participants?
We've discharged one and accepted her back into the program. We allowed her to do a program called Living Free out of KCDC to go through that program and then bring her back in. So, and that's always an option.
Mm-hmm.
That's not against our rule. We can bring participants back.
And did she pass then? Did she make it
the second time around, no. Okay. No. So it takes a lot to get kicked out of behavioral health treatment court. So we do try to work with them as much as we can. We try every option that we can throw at them, whether it's residential treatment, inpatient treatment, halfway houses, everything that we got, we try to give them as much as treatment as possible.
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding the numbers. So out of 21, 18 have not made it through, and 3 have.
Correct. We have.
But you said 29, so the other 6 are still in.
We currently have 11.
Okay, there you go.
So 18 have been discharged from the program.
Okay, gotcha.
So because we're a treatment court program, they're required to see their psychiatrist. They have counseling on a weekly basis. They also go to AODA community support programs in the community, especially those who have co-occurring disorders. So it's all about treatment, and they're getting a lot of treatment every week. When we work with our individuals, they are learning basic skills. A lot of them need just from teaching them about keeping your calendar, making sure that you're making your appointments on time, staying organized so that they don't miss appointments and get kicked out of their treatment. Basic skills is what they need, and to make sure that they are stable on their medications and that they're clean and sober. And so once some can do really well. They appreciate the structure. Some do really well on structure. And even if they are discharged from the program, services are still available to them. So even though they may not make it through behavioral health treatment court, we try to still offer those case management services, medication monitoring, and we're still there to help them if possible. Yes, sir.
Is this in lieu of jail time? I mean, they're given a choice, behavioral court or jail time.
Correct.
So when they flunk out, they go to jail or?
It depends. Most of them do go back to jail for a period of time if they don't successfully complete the program. They're all placed on probation, so most of them are on the program as an alternative to revocation. So if they don't complete it, then they do go back for a period of time to serve out their sentence.
Supervisor Bob?
I have a question. Have you ever had anyone who actually graduated from this program and ended up back in jail?
One.
And so what happened? Did they have the opportunity to go back and enroll again in treatment court?
They can.
Okay, but this person did not?
Not that I know of, not at the moment. The option is open to her, and there are some negotiations at this moment. So I have a feeling she'll probably come back to the program.
You said this started in 2013. How long is a session, or how long does it take to get through that? You've had three graduates, which doesn't look like many, but it's only been less than 2 years. So.
Correct. The program is up to 2 years.
Okay.
The graduates that we do have completed the program before that. If we are working with the individual and they make it through the three phases that we have, they are stable, they're independent, they've completed everything that we have asked them to do, then they can graduate early. And their probation could also end early if need be. So those are the biggest characteristics or accomplishments they can receive.
Supervisor Gable?
After 2 years, you just cut them loose, or they still have access to?
We don't cut them loose. They still have access to case management services, medication monitoring. We have an open door policy that they know that they can come back and call and check in with us. They know we develop a really good relationship with them. The ones that have discharged off the program, I hear from them all the time. They call me for other resources or connect in the community. So they never go away because we work with them for that series of time and develop a good relationship with them. They always call back.
Supervisor Johnson?
You know, it's really hard to hear the numbers that don't make it through, but you know, statistically in the general population too with mental health, one of the biggest issues is not staying on their meds. Is that the same thing that you're seeing, that they're coming off their meds and
correct
the same cycle? Then you can get them back on their meds. It's, okay.
Yep. That's it. Sometimes when just like us, when we have an antibiotic and we start feeling better, we tend to maybe not finish the whole bottle of medications like we're supposed to. Sometimes that happens with individuals who have mental illness. They're on their medications, they feel great, and something may happen where they feel like, oh, maybe I don't need medications. And so there, for various reasons, they can get off of the medications and go back to feeling symptomatic, and we have to reel them in, or it takes a period of time to kind of be patient and work with them, which we do. But once we can get them back on track, and maybe they may need an inpatient hospitalization, Well, we also have access to our Adult Crisis Care Center, which is a halfway house that we bring people in for crisis stabilization. We try to get them stable and back into the community again.
Supervisor Gable?
How do these people, how do you get them referred to you? I mean, do you look for them or they look for you?
Well, we get referrals from everyone. It can be from their public defender, from the district attorney's office, anyone in the community. If you got a neighbor who you find out they've got some criminal charges, but you know they're not right, something's going on with them, we can get referrals from anyone. I've gotten referrals from local residents in the community, and they say, hey, they give me a name. I look them up, contact their public defender, and say, hey. Sometimes we know the name, sometimes we don't know the name. That's the good thing about Kenosha Human Development Services, that we're kind of the heartbeat of mental health services in the community. So 9 times out of 10, we have a great big database where we know a lot of names. So sometimes the referrals are spot on. We know the person already and it's a perfect referral. And sometimes it's not. So it's our job to kind of research that. Our district attorney has the role of checking the person's charges and criminal history to make sure that they qualify for the program.
Supervisor Dodge?
Yes, I see so far you've only had 3 graduates. What kind of cost saving is to the county for somebody that actually does graduate versus incarceration?
That's a good question. And I'm trying to research that. By speaking with a couple of the corporals, and because I want to know day by day how much it costs for an average person to be inside the jail. So I'm working on putting those numbers together, and I can certainly get back to you with the number of the cost and savings.
Our youth and governance member have a question.
Yes. Yeah. You said 29 are accepted, but 62 are referred. Is that something that they apply to be in, and then you get accepted through there? Do they accept it?
Anytime we get a referral, the first thing that happens is our district attorney looks at the person's history. We try to do a case-by-case basis, mm-hmm. but if we don't take any type of sexual assaults, we don't take any sex offenders, if the person has a violent history in the past, it's up to the discretion of the district attorney to make that decision on whether they would qualify for a behavioral health treatment court. So a lot of our referrals to the program have been high, but sometimes the referring attorney may not know all of the qualifications of the program, and so it's just a quick denial because the person is too violent. The current charges are sexual assault, so it could be a simple misunderstanding of what the actual qualifications are of the program.
Supervisor Arrington and then Supervisor Bob.
Thank you, Chairman. I got a couple of things. I guess my first thing I would say is that, I'm very proud of the program. Any minimal progress is better than no progress at all. For us to have 3 is better than for us to have 0. And I'll definitely be rooting for you all to, you currently have 11 participants in there right now. If we can continue to grow this program where, people are starting to benefit in a positive way from being involved in this. I, without the numbers right in front of me going into point number 2, I guarantee you this saves the county money. The state, it's $50,000 a year on the taxpayers in the state, which I think is, I reserve my personal comments about that. It's $50,000 a year for us. That's probably the biggest thing we pay for in the whole country is to incarcerate people. So I would much rather see us have a in-step process locally that can deter us from sending any more people to state penitentiaries. I know that a year or so ago we were talking about this situation. This nonviolent offender program is much better than sending nonviolent offenders to mix and coexist in a hardcore prison environment with violent offenders. They have drug habits. They're not getting drug counseling in the prisons. I've heard horrendous stories of rape and beatings and all kinds of different violent acts that happen to these nonviolent offenders. So I was very happy to see this go forward. I guess the one thing I could say is that, you know, are we publicizing this program enough? Does it get the recognition? Is it getting the push that it needs for us to maybe, you know, increase its visibility out there? Or is it all just done through the DA and et cetera? Is there more visibility needed on the program?
Well, we have been in the Kenosha News once.
Okay.
Actually, they came and observed Mr. Jones's graduation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have had some exposure to the public. We try to put ourselves out there as much as possible. I'm willing to come and speak anywhere in the community, at any meeting, at any time. So other than our own agency and just word of mouth, we try to do the best as we can to get the word out there about the program.
My last thing I'm going to ask you to do, can you break this down for me by gender and race? I would be interested to know how many African-American men and women versus Hispanic men and women, Caucasian men and women, Pacific Islander, and whatever else they put on those survey sheets to identify us here in the United States of America. I'd be interested to know the numbers of how many of each group from all races and genders are coming through this program, just for so I can get a broader picture on compare this to compare to the numbers that we're seeing in the state of state-level incarcerations. And you think we can put that, she doesn't have to come back, I just would like for her to, you can put it in an email or something for us.
Absolutely.
I would appreciate that.
Absolutely. I know, I would tell you this, we went to a training about 6 months ago, and we developed a training for Kenosha County, Walworth County, and Racine County. All of our treatment courts came together for it. My diversity training. We had a national speaker come in just to kind of do some workshops and work groups with us. And I would say that Kenosha County program had the highest minority rate in our program. At that specific time, we had 50% of minorities in our program.
Mm-hmm.
And the other counties did not have anywhere near our numbers. And so we've never had a problem with recruiting minorities in the program. We've been very successful at that, and I can certainly get those specific numbers to you and break the race and
gender
down.
Thank you.
No problem.
I would definitely appreciate that. That's all I really have. Yeah, keep up the good work. I'm quite sure this board is very open to your visits and keeping us in the loop in terms of mental health care. It's a big thing that we got going on right now here in the state. Specifically here in Kenosha County, I'm 100% supporter of these kind of programs because these programs, in my mind, give people a second chance before the level of incarceration at the state level, where I don't believe that we're doing very much at that level. So I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I know Supervisor Blau and then Supervisor Gable, but just really quickly, I want to remind members, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, but the cost-benefit analysis that was done on treatment and diversion programs, not just behavioral health, but also drug court as well as veterans court, the cost-benefit analysis was done by the La Follette School of Public Affairs and is available online. If members are interested and you're feeling kind of nerdy, I can email you the link to dig into it. If it's of interest to our youth and governance members, I can make sure you get that as well. Supervisor Black.
Okay. So you said you limit the enrollment to nonviolent. What about the violent people? Do they receive any kind of, treatment from you, your department, or what happens to them if they don't get accepted to this program? Something can do for them?
Absolutely. If they're out of custody and after they serve time, they can certainly come to Kenosha Human Development Services and we can work with them on getting them insurance, referrals for counseling, a psychiatrist if it's need be, anger management groups. And so our agency has a resource center where anyone could come in and get linked to community services.
Thank you.
Even though we may receive a referral and the case may be a violent case, it's up to the discretion of the district attorney's office whether they want to refer them to our program or not.
Oh, okay.
They take a look at the the case detail by detail. You know, they interview the victim. Sometimes the victim is a family member and they want the person to get some help. So each, they take it on as a case by case basis if violence is attached to the court, their case.
Okay, thank you.
Supervisor Gable?
Mr. Jones, do you mind sharing your story? You're a graduate.
My name is Lorenzo Jones. I've been a resident of Kenosha for nearly 30 years, and life haven't been so great for me in that process. In and out of prison 6 times, accumulated to about 28 years. Just a year of 2013, 2014, I was apprehended for alleged crime and was locked up. And was going through the process. And I was referred to this program, which I had my doubts about, because in my past, I have completed every program the state of Wisconsin have, even to the most intense program. But I guess it was just my completeness to satisfy the facilitator or the recommender or the parole board. It was never to better myself. Coming into this program, I was stunned, I was shocked. There were some things going on in my life that I wasn't aware of. I found out I had a mental illness. Had not come into this program, I would not have known that. I was put into medication. Today, my life is totally the reverse. I'm a single parent. I have a 10-year-old daughter, just her and I. I live alone with her. I'm on Social Security, which is disabled. I was in the program. This program, the behavior treatment program, taught me some issues in my life that I should have knew when I was 16 or 17. You know, I'm 54 today. And it was so much of an experience to me to where I couldn't do nothing but continue to grow each day I was in the program. I believe I was in it 46, 42 weeks and graduated from the program. I did what I was supposed to do, and I'm still involved in the program. I'm a curriculum writer. I've written a program strictly that caters this program, the needs of mental illnesses, the thinking pattern, the importance of other aspects of life. And for me, it's been a good thing. The class that I was involved in, the people that's still in the program, that was there when I was there, I believe all peoples is good peoples. I believe whatever issues that they have going on with themselves, that's something they need to deal with themselves, whether it's the medication, whether it's the inability to follow rules, or, you know, whether the inability to be a family person or whatever. That's just something that I learned personally that they need to deal with themselves. You, him, her, or no one else can't teach no one that. For me, it's been a life turnaround for me.
Congratulations.
Yes, sir.
One of the new things we're going to do is we've created an alumni program. And so we're going to do a lot of mentorship. Mr. Jones is going to take the lead along with myself, and we are starting a new alumni group towards the end of the month. And so we're going to be meeting with all of the participants once a month, maybe twice a month, just to bring them all together outside of court, just to ask questions or pick out a topic of discussion, just to create a more separate atmosphere from the court, so that we can create an alumni system, and he can, the other participants can see that you can graduate and be successful with the program. And so that's our next initiative that we're taking on.
If it's not too much to ask, it wasn't so much of an imposition, if folks were willing and it made sense, would it be possible for one of us to attend and meet your alums just sort of outside of a courtroom setting, if that's okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Supervisor Decker.
in here it says your current participants are 11. Is that like the max that you can facilitate? It's just what we have right now. So we haven't hit like the maximum or the ceiling of number of people that we can help. Okay. What would you say it is? Would you estimate?
Between 20 and 25.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm on the paper.
The governance member, Sarah. I get it.
I'm on the paper. It says that people that have mental illnesses and other and or co-occurring disorders, what are like the co-occurring disorders?
Alcohol and drug issues.
Okay. Thank you.
Our court meets every Thursday at 3:30 in Branch 8. Judge Kirkman is the judge assigned to our program. And so anyone is welcome to come in and sit. If you want to come into our staffing, we meet an hour before court to go over everyone. Feel free to contact me and we can allow you to come in and sit in our staffing. But the courtroom itself is open to the public.
Youth and Governance Member Jasmine.
Prior to your program starting 2 years ago, were people with mental illnesses just like everybody else that was violent or nonviolent in jails, or is there any other programs?
We have maybe 5 years ago, we originally had the Behavioral Health Jail Diversion Program. And I was also the coordinator for that program. That was the first jail diversion program, behavioral health jail, program that we had here. And so that program was quite successful. And so the county kind of decided to do a behavioral health treatment court. Both programs are quite similar. However, our treatment court, we take felony cases. The behavioral health jail diversion program that we also have takes misdemeanor nonviolent offenses, so lesser offenses. They are different. Like I said, the type of offenders that we take are a little bit more harsh, but we do have the behavioral health jail diversion, our program, and the drug court as well. Treatment courts are becoming very popular throughout our nation, and so it's a good thing that Kenosha County has picked up these programs as well.
I have a question for Mr. Jones. This may not be the kind of setting where you want to get too personal. You mentioned that you had a daughter. What does she say about the person that you've become?
Well, other peoples and families call her my shadow. She loved me to death. I put all my time into her. What I do, I involve her in. Where I go, I take her. We're never apart other than moments like this. And I wouldn't just say 100% I owe my betterment to the program. I have to give myself some credit for opening my eyes to realize that, hey, is this what it's been all my life? I mean, now I see. And I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I feel every day that there's no level that I can't reach. Mentally, I consider myself to be a pretty smart individual, you know. I just accept day by day what it is. I have no need, I have no desire or craving for drugs and alcohol, which I wasn't that type of person anyway. I doesn't smoke. I just try to live a normal life. I'm in love with that, you know. I'm at the point where I'm afraid to even get into a relationship because I don't believe I fully develop myself. So, you know, I just want to do me and her right now, be the best parent I can be.
Thank you for your bravery. It's not easy. Any other questions? Okay.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Look forward to your email.
Yes. Yes.
Agenda item number 6, Vision of Aging and Disability Services presentation, Dementia-Friendly Community. Good evening, Ms. Giles.
Hi. It's the hardest to follow.
but you may want to introduce yourself for our two youth in governance members who do not know who you are.
I'm Laverne Jarris. I'm director of the Human Services Department of Aging and Disability Services, and our division is responsible for services for the elderly, persons with disabilities, and persons with mental illness. And so I just wanted to alert you that we are, you're going to be hearing more about dementia-friendly communities, and tonight was an opportunity to tell you that we got a foundation grant of $40,000 a year for 2 years from the Helen Bader Foundation to enhance our efforts at developing a dementia-friendly community. We have a dementia care specialist grant from the state, and this will enhance our activities. Dementia-friendly communities, it's something that's being really promoted by the state and actually throughout the nation and other countries, realizing that the population of persons, certainly the older population is increasing significantly, and age is one of the biggest factors in dementia, one of the highest risk factors. So even though about, I think, 4% of people who have dementia are under 65, we are seeing more people what they call early onset dementia, but still the highest risk factor is aging, and that population is growing. So with a dementia-friendly community is a place where persons with dementia are able to lead lives as independent as possible, to continue to be a part of the community, maintain social networks and feel like they belong, where they can find their way around the community and be safe, where they can access local facilities like banks, grocery stores, and libraries, where they're met with patience and understanding, and where they're given support where necessary. As you begin to look into this, we see that there are so many things that can be done to create a more dementia-friendly community. We're going to be focusing some initial activity more west of I-94, because that was the initial, their grant focused on rural areas, but and now it turns out that they said that actually Kenosha County itself can be considered rural for purposes of this grant, but we did have some people that, when we applied for the grant in the county, that pledged some support for it. So we're going to start there. We'll be able to hire a part-time person with the grant, and some of the things that are being done in other communities. Well, certainly, public awareness is one area that we both, throughout the community through media and public presentations. We're going to be doing more, we already have started, and we'll be doing more memory screenings at locations throughout the county where where we can do our staff. We have several staff trained to do dementia screens and then make referrals to appropriate resources. Creating business and service environments that reduce anxiety for those with dementia, and we're anxious to partner with businesses on this. Things like clear, visible signage, lighting, absence of loud music, et cetera, things that can make it more where a person with dementia could go into the business and conduct business without the anxiety that accompanies dementia. Opportunities for exercise, socialization, and artistic expression, all things that are important in slowing the progression of dementia. Music and memory programs, similar to that, that's being done at Brookside Care Center. We're hoping that we can make that available to people who are living at home with a family caregiver or have a caregiver involved, because it does help with people opening up more, expressing themselves. Music has been found to be an important denominator in becoming more involved. Dementia-friendly churches, things like having greeters, sisters, large print, clear directions, training of for staff of small businesses, clerks, bank tellers, hairdressers, waitresses. So, years ago, we had a cooperative relationship with the Chamber of Commerce, who got a grant, and we were doing some training with small businesses on helping employees to be alert to people who might be at risk of abuse or neglect. But I see ourselves doing something similar with this and offering training, could be in 30-minute increments with people at a place of business to, so that they can learn a little bit more about dementia and learn how they could be more helpful and understand what the person might be going through. Training for families and health professionals on risk reduction and de-escalation. Purple Heart Angel Decals, that's a movement that's actually, I think, started in Britain and has caught on in communities in the U.S. where where companies have made some accommodations in their business and have trained their staff, and they have a purple angel on the window, a decal indicating that they're a dementia-friendly business. Although now there's some discussion, some difficult about whether we should use angels or not in Wisconsin. The attachment is a PowerPoint, a draft of a PowerPoint that is being used to present to businesses. So we're real excited to get this program started.
Supervisor Decker.
You have in here that it's estimated 100,000 people in Wisconsin with dementia. Is this the way it's worded? It sounds like approximately 100,000 people live
in their homes.
In their homes. So that doesn't include people that live in nursing homes and
correct.
Places like that. What percentage, or do they know what percentage of people with dementia have Alzheimer's versus, you know,
actually,
the breakdown of that?
Yeah, the majority, Alzheimer's is the greatest
component of dementia.
Category of dementia. Let me just look here a second. That's right here. It could be there are some other conditions, but Alzheimer's is the biggest. I don't think I have the actual statistics though, in terms of what percent.
Okay, but it is the biggest.
Yeah, so it's followed by vascular dementia, Lewy body dementia, and then others.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Gable.
Like the Myers and Costco, although I can't see somebody with dementia going to Costco, but possibly Myers Pick and Save, are them stores accommodating? I mean, I look at the Pick and Save on 18th. There's that big senior citizen complex all over that whole area. I mean, do these stores recognize these people and help them, or?
Well, we haven't started yet approaching these businesses and seeing. We're also, as part of this, we're going to be organizing an advisory committee so that it's not just us, but other people who are interested in this issue that to become involved. And we also want to hear from family caregivers and individuals with dementia themselves about the barriers that they're finding, and you know what are their experiences in trying to be involved in the community when they go to stores, when they go to church, wherever.
Well, you see, I do Meals for Wheels, and most of the people I have some form of dementia. I mean, they're not out, so obviously they're not doing their own shopping. They have, mm-hmm. Well, like you say, I run into people that, like you say, because that Pick and Save is right by them. And you can see some of these people, I want to say having issues, or not even issues, just like being confused for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, and you know, like I say, and I've never noticed anybody in the store, you know, stepping forward, and they bring buses with, and you know, like you say, I've never seen, you know, the stores making an effort.
Well, that's the kind of thing that we'll be looking at. There's a training video that shows an older woman with dementia who's just, you know, she coming into the store and getting confused about a certain product, and the difference between this, just a simple stepping, when somebody comes up and steps to, and looks at her list and says, oh, you want this and this, here's where you can find it, let me show you, as opposed to just letting her wander and get more anxious.
Yeah. And my mother's had a couple of minor strokes. And like I say, she's incapable. She can live by herself. She can feed herself. But if you would turn her loose in the grocery store, it'd be a month before you'd find her. But, you know, so I'm very sympathetic. These people need, you know, they need assistance. They don't need full-time assistance.
Right, right.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, agenda item number 7, long-term care legislative update.
Thank you.
Well, the Joint Finance Committee acted last week on long-term care programs, and put a little summary together that's paper-clipped. The action that they took, a number of advocates, long-term care advocates, are pretty upset because they feel what they described it as the governor's budget in sheep's clothing, because they're essentially for family care and IRIS, two programs that they were concerned about. The it pretty much is what the governor had asked, they deleted that language, and then they added components, but the basic intent is that they will be eliminating the IRIS program, which is a self-directed model of community long-term care support, and they will be building in what they call a self-directed model in family care, which is being converted into an integrated model of care, which means that it will, the managed care organizations will be providing acute and primary care as well as long-term care services. And what people object to is they like now the family care model or the IRIS model, they have an option. Family care because it provides the long-term care services but doesn't require that you change your doctor or hospital, which an integrated model may require. And they like the others like the IRIS program because it offered, they instead of having it case managed, they have a they get a stipend and they pick out their own service providers. So especially people with who have relatives that with severe disabilities, particularly like the IRIS model. So on a statewide level, advocates are still pretty upset about this. And that with regard to the Aging and Disability Resource Centers, they did remove the governor's language, and they would be retaining the Aging and Disability Resource Centers. But it would require DHS, Department of Health Services, to evaluate the functional screen and options counseling reliability and consistency across ADRCs, that they feel that there are, for some reason, inconsistencies among the ADRCs within the state, and so they're going to be evaluating that and then reporting back to the Joint Finance Committee. And they're going to require that DHS require DHS to study ADRC governing boards. I think that there's not, oh yes, they are, and looking at whether they're duplicating any functions that are currently provided by the department for quality review. And they're going to remove duplication. And I think that, I just noticed that the one part that I wanted to get in that's missing. The other thing that they're going to ask for a report on is to evaluate the possibility of coordinating the functions of the ADRC with the Economic Support Consortium, and or the Income Maintenance Consortium, like we have now with between Kenosha and Racine. They want to evaluate and report back to the Joint Finance Committee a report on whether it would be feasible for those to be combined.
Who do they have that's doing that study?
They haven't named it.
What's your feeling on that?
They've given the authority to DHS, but it hasn't, yeah. Department of Health Services, but it hasn't come out. I mean, yeah. The budget hasn't been passed yet, right. So I mean, the devil's in the detail there, too.
So we don't know if it'll actually be DHS or if DHS is going to contract out.
Correct.
What's your feeling on combining the ADRC with Racine?
Well, we have two models now. We have the income maintenance model, and which relies heavily on people calling into a central number and they don't know who they're going to get. We get a lot of complaints from people about that because they want to access a worker. They want to be able to talk to somebody face to face. So that's one model. The other model is a very new one, is what we have with Comprehensive Community Services for Mental Health. In that case, we each really retain our own services. People access services in the communities directly, and we have just an overlay of a very slight overlay of administration, which provides quality assurance and training and that for both counties. But that's pretty new. We just started that December of last year. Now, if it was that kind of model where we each, where people can still have local access to services, then I think we would be fine. If somehow it ends up relying on telephone service versus person-to-person service, then I think that would, people may not get the kind of service that they should be getting.
For youth and governance, the ADRC is Aging Development Services. It's kind of one-stop shopping for seniors. They can call down there and get help. And if you're 65 years old and not familiar with the internet, you know, Lord, it's nice to talk to a real human being.
I just talked to somebody from, some people from Iowa who had been there, or they're from here, but they had been in Iowa trying to get access services for the one person for their mother. And they had a regional ADRC that would not allow them. The case was really complicated because there was farmland involved and access to and they just wanted to see somebody, to talk to somebody face to face. Thank you, John. And they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't allow them. They Des Moines had a face to face, but they weren't in the Des Moines region. They were in the next region, and that place did not allow face to face. They had to try to deal with this on the telephone. They said it was horrible experience. And then the other thing with the income, trying to tie it with the Income Maintenance Consortium, is I think it's a lack of recognition that that so much of our services are not just for people accessing Medicaid, that we're trying to help people avoid the need for Medicaid down the line, or to help them with working out, you know, family caregiver issues, or finding resources in the community using their own assets. And so I think that kind of model might ignore that aspect of our services.
Can you explain a little bit what it means when it says functional screen and options counseling reliability and consistency? I know there's a couple of different models that the state has put forward for ADRCs. It essentially lets counties choose, depending on their size, what they want to do and partner with. So I'm like, it wasn't supposed to be a one-size-fits-all. It was supposed to be tailored to what your community decided it needed to do. So I'm kind of, what do they mean by this? Out of curiosity.
Well, we have initially, the functional screen is actually a tool that's tested. People have to pass a test to apply the functional screen, which has a series of questions to determine whether you're functionally eligible for the programs. The economic support workers determine whether you're financially eligible. We determine whether you're functionally eligible, and that tool should be pretty consistent whether you're in Kenosha County or whether you're in Barron County. Then the other piece of it is to is the options counseling. So staff are expected to present all of the options to people, what they, you know, they, whether they are, you know, to family care or the partnership program or IRIS or if they didn't go into the program at all, you know, what their options are. So, and there was at least one legislator that shared with us that he felt that he thought that other people in the state thought that we were that some ADRCs were pushing people into the IRIS program at higher rates, you know, and encouraging them to go into that program because there has been a large increase in enrollment in that program. So whether that's true or not, certainly not in our office, I think we're pretty even about, I mean, that's just it's a high priority for us to give people all the options that they have.
Any questions?
So we don't, it's, while on one hand we feel that there's a little victory in that if we're going to remain for now, there's still that uncertainty of what the real intention is. Is it to try to push for some kind of a consortium or regional model? Will things look like they do now, or will, you know, how different will they be?
Is there perhaps some language that this committee and then the county board should consider in terms of directing to the legislature on what to do or perhaps what not to do any more than we already have?
I don't know at this time. I think probably just encouraging the state that we want to be partners in the development of it. You know, if there are any improvements to be made, we want to be partners in that improvement, like we were at the beginning of the whole long-term care redesign. We partnered with the state and we worked together towards developing what was a model program in the country. But if they feel that there's a need for change, we just want to be part of it and have some input into the process.
Yeah, one
supervisor.
Just the only observation-ish type thing is the cost. When I've read through these things, I understand the model we have works very well. I don't think there's a question about that. It's very expensive. It's a lot of money that's involved. So when you're a legislator looking at and looking at budgets and so forth, I mean, everything is on the table, and I assume this was too, and we'll see what happens. But according to this thing, it's they want to save $14.3 million on MA costs, which is, that sounds like a lot of money. Reduce benefits cost by $14 million.
I believe that $14 million, I mean, yes, I think they hope that over a long period of time that they will save some money by having this integrated model. But this $14 million, I believe, is really the when they're going to be expanding the program, they didn't account for the county's contributions from the new counties that will be starting family care. You know, like we put in 1.6 million a year when we got family care. We had to agree to put in that much money. So I think this $14 million is really the contribution from the new counties that are going into the program.
There's eight counties that currently aren't in family care throughout the state that would be enrolled in this. One of them is, I believe, Dane County, which would have a fairly large ticket. So I believe Laverne is correct. When we didn't meet with some local legislators, they were referring to the fact that when those counties got in, that's how they can afford to continue the programs. You know, and on the flip side, depending on how they design this, if folks aren't getting the services they need in their homes, they're going to end up in nursing homes, which is going to cost us a heck of a lot more than what we're paying for in-home services. So
it is true that the costs have gone up, but it's so has the population needing long-term care, and they have shown that as with this program that the number of nursing home beds has gone down, which was the intent, one of the intent intentions of the program from the beginning was to try to, because Wisconsin had a higher ratio of nursing home beds, one of the highest in the country, and they were trying to reduce that, and because of the projections of greater costs in the future.
Do you know at all, and this is due to my ignorance because I should have the answer to this, if Secretary Kitty Rhodes has said anything about some changes Joint Finance has made? I mean, she's been involved in long-term care as a nurse, I know, for years. She's Secretary of DHS. I know she was caught very much off guard when this came out.
I haven't heard any response from her. She had early on been a proponent of the IRIS program. She liked the IRIS program. How she, right now, I don't know that she would say anything contrary to that.
Right.
Fever. So, can this integrated model be tried? I mean, is it something that, or not, or what's your opinion on that?
Well, actually, it is being tried right now because people have a choice now between family care, which is just the long-term care services, IRIS, which is a self-directed model, or a partnership program now, which is an integrated model currently. And only out of the, we've had, what do I say, about 1,100 people in Kenosha County in the in family care, and only about 60 who have chosen the partnership program. I thought it was a great idea when it first came. I was excited that we were going to be getting partnership program because I thought, in concept, it sounds great to integrate both your acute and primary care. But people don't choose it because they don't want to give up their doctors or their preferred hospital or doctors. And that means so much to them that our fear is that they will forego the other services that they need in order to keep their doctor. So if the provider network is so restricted in the new program, or if they don't have sufficient providers, then we could see fewer people going into the program.
It's a tough thing.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Agenda item number 8, which other businesses authorized by law. There is any agenda item 9. Any member comments?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gable, second by Supervisor Dunn. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Committee is adjourned.
Thank you.
That was painless.
Oh.
So that was like speaking French to you guys.